Konnichiwa, and welcome to this week's episode of the Hashira Half Hour. I am your resident Murata stan. Stan Murata for clear skin. I'm Hannah, and I am always joined by my two friends.
Hi, guys. What's up? It's Emily. I am your resident Hannah and Brian stan. So...
No. Oh, no. Not me. You're going to cry before we even start. Oh, man. I don't know how to follow those two. What up, y'all? It's me, your homie. This week, I am the Pokemon you transferred to Nurse Joy because you were like, that Pokemon sucks. So.
Oh. Huh.
I don't know what I had there. Or wait, hold on. Take two. I'm the endeavor that's not going to emotionally abuse you. There you go.
There you go. With your hair. Brian, yes. We're loving the new hair. It is bright. It is main character feeling. It is awesome.
Oh, endeavor. First of fame.
I don't know. I don't think that's, what is it? Oh, Sun Ultra something.
Something like that. I can't remember. My brain is removed from My Hero for too long that I need to rewatch. But we're here to talk about Demon Slayer as per usual. Today's episode was episode 16. We are more than halfway through season one. We actually have only like 10 episodes left, which is wild. But in this episode, we definitely are moving away from that slapstick comedy that we have been enjoying for the past couple of episodes. But of course, we got to move on at some point because that's not what this show is really about. We're diving back into those darker themes of the show. Quite a lot happened in this episode. I know I say that a lot, but it's true. These episodes go by so fast and they can squeeze a lot into these 25 minutes. I'll just throw that out there. But we do dive right back in where we left off, attempting to find the demon who is controlling the Slayers. I do want to call out Murata in this moment here. For some reason, I stan him. I really don't know why, but I stan Murata for clear skin. Last episode, we saw him mention that he was a senior to Tanjiro and Inosuke, so we're assuming that he is higher ranked than them, but he is able to just say, all right, I'm going to stay back behind. You guys go on ahead to the stronger parts because they're probably going to be stronger as you get closer to the demon. Do you think Murata was able to figure out that maybe these two boys are a little special? And what do you think that says about his character?
I mean, we're all special, right? We're all born into this world, so we're all special. It's an Attack on Titan reference.
Eren Yeager.
Eren Baker. But I think it is kind of special, right? Like, I mean, obviously, probably not like a favorite moment for Murata, right? Because like when we think about it, like you have to be able to remove yourself from the situation and say, I'm probably not as talented as these two other Slayers. So like, let me handle these like still somewhat like, you know, tough foes, but also in the same breath, like, I can't handle anything harder than this. I think it shows that he's willing to, you know, support the cause. And I think he's a strong foil for that, right? Like his ability to understand his role in the battle. I think that's really important. Recent quote I got from someone, you know, somebody has to dig ditches. Someone has to be like a Mizunoto, right? Or a Mizunoe. So I think it's a really interesting kind of way of using him as a foil there.
Yeah. I think he's also keenly aware of just like, maybe more so than Tanjiro and Inosuke so far, of just like what's already happened and that they've already been wiped out a little bit, and that at least these two that are coming in ready to help have already substantially more energy probably than anybody that's left standing, even if he feels like maybe he has slightly more skill, whether he thinks that they're a little bit special, they're better equipped for this particular fight. And so part of what makes a Demon Slayer is not only their fighting capabilities, but also I think their quick like thought process and like strategizing. And so I think that he just knows that these two are going to be in a better position to be able to fight whatever it is that's going to be stronger than what's already wiped out the Demon Slayers that we see right at the beginning. So if nothing else, he's incredibly intelligent and you know, well-equipped to be making decisions, I think, at least on behalf of the group that he's there representing.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think about the fact that he's probably understanding that these two are fresh and like not tired, and he probably is. So that could be it. That could really be the reason why he was like, you go on without me. I'm too tired for this shit. I don't know why I love Murata so much. I just do. But we'll move on from him. Tanjiro and Inosuke find some more slayers that are in bad shape as they get closer to that demon. They're definitely putting up a bigger fight against them. We see one even begging Tanjiro and Inosuke to end him because he's in so much pain and his bones are like piercing his inner organs. It's pretty wild. Inosuke is willing to do it. He's like, all right, cool. Tanjiro wants to think of another way. What do you think of the contrast of those two characters reacting to the situation? Does it track with their characters?
Absolutely. They both have different senses of like empathy and pity almost, I think. Tanjiro, obviously, we've seen him go through some hardcore trauma throughout the entire duration of the show. And so he has like a very healthy respect for the sanctity of human life, I think. And so for him, I think that just the thought of like continuing to have that precious gift of life when it gets taken away from other people, without them being able to choose, I think that he would do everything in his power to try to save that person's life, regardless of maybe what the quality of life might be. I think for Tanjiro, just like the gift of having life in the first place outweighs anything else. For Inosuke, he's been raised like in the wilderness and around animals and boars. And I don't know that he's like unkind about this. I think it's a different way to show that kind of empathy and that sensitivity that I mentioned. And I do think that it absolutely tracks with his character that he would also have a respect for the sanctity of life in that he respects this other character's decision like to choose and that they are asking for something. And so he thinks that it's the kinder thing to just put them out of their misery and to like acquiesce to their request. So I don't know that either of them are wrong necessarily. They just approach it from different views.
Definitely. I think looking at like their approaches, right? Inosuke is kind of just following the food chain, right? Like looking at his animalistic instincts, right? Like the wilderness, the strongest survive. And I think Inosuke knows, and so does this demon slayer who's begging to be killed, like that they're no longer a competitive force, right? That they are just a hindrance at that point. And I think it's also kind of a release for that character, right? That little slayer who's getting banged up. It's like, hey, like, please help me. And I think because Inosuke's background is like do or die, I think he's a lot more willing and understanding of it. Is where, you know, Tanjiro has lived in a society at that point and his values kind of strike it differently because, kind of like you said, Emily, right? Like he values the quality of, or just having life instead of the quality of life. And I think that's where, their differences really lie, is what they value and the culture that was brought to them. So I think it's an interesting contrast that creates, that like just continually grows between the two of them. So I do really like that contrast as well, because I think it puts them kind of in, I think it puts Inosuke in a different category now. I think this is the first time that we see Inosuke make a decision that maybe wasn't fully based off of his own intention or off of his pride, right? Like he was willing to do this not because he needed to show Tanjiro up or be Lord Inosuke. It was because someone else needed help at that point. And I think that's where this was kind of a turning point for Inosuke in my books.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at the end of the day, he was just doing what the guy was asking for. You know, he saw that perfectly as something kind. He wanted to put him out of his misery, but Tanjiro was maybe not quite willing to do that just yet, coming up with some more ideas. Speaking of Tanjiro, he did have some great ideas in this moment. We continue to see his battle smarts show up in battle when he, you know, comes up with that idea to throw them over the tree. But unfortunately, that did not work the way he had hoped because the demon twisted their necks, you know, rendering them useless, if you know what I mean. I found this to be a very dark turn in the episode. I remember not expecting that when I first saw this episode. I was like, oh, okay. Did you see that coming? And what does that say about the lengths that this demon will go to win?
First off, I want to say that this is a pretty good episode for Halloween. You know, you get your little exorcist moment in there. So that was a good start. But did I see it coming? Yeah, unfortunately, I did. I was like, these guys are dead. There's no way. Those threads are still attached at that point. And I was like, man, this demon is clearly cruel enough, right? Like, again, it kind of goes back to what I was talking about last week with the manipulation and puppetry type sitch, right? Like, you're using something until you're done with it. And she was like, they're useless now. They are weak human puppets. And then she's like, yay! And then they're dead, you know? Like, I think it shows that this demon really is trying to prove itself. You know, especially after she was approached by Rui, I think that was like her tipping point.
Yeah. Was I surprised? Not necessarily. I didn't know how they were going to die. I think the first time I watched this, and it's a little hard to think back now because I feel like I've seen it so many times, but I didn't know, I don't think initially, like how it was going to happen. And it was more violent, I think, than what I was expecting. It was quicker, I guess, maybe is the better word. I thought maybe it was going to be more like all their limbs and like a slow, painful, agonizing death, like what we've already seen with like the individual Demon Slayer. But she is, you know, time was of the essence, I think, for this larger demon that's kind of the puppeteer behind everything that's going on. And so kind of a painless death for all these humans, which we haven't seen a whole lot with other big demons and big fights. It's like everything's like very painful. And granted, they were already like constrained by the string, so I don't know how great they were feeling, but the actual death itself was very fast. So I think that that was kind of shocking to see that for the first time in a different demon. Surprising, not entirely. I, you know, unfortunately, they're not our main characters, so they're not safe.
They don't have plot armor.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can't really drive the story a whole lot. So yeah, we're seeing this demon just get more and more like nervous and trying to get things done quickly as Rui shows up and threatens her with father, all that fun stuff, which we'll touch on in a minute. But before we dive into, actually, I'm ahead of myself here. We see Tanjiro's presence change as he knelt in front of his slain comrade. I thought this was, again, an interesting moment. I will always call out Tanjiro, but he caused Inosuke to literally like shake because of how much his presence was changing when this happened. And then when Tanjiro says, like, let's go, Inosuke just follows suit and is like, okay, yeah, let's go, which is quite a bit different than what Inosuke usually does. Do you think Inosuke was genuinely like scared of Tanjiro in this moment, or was it maybe something else? Was he maybe wanting to just move forward because he wanted to get away from the dead slayers? Like, what was going on in that moment?
I don't know that Inosuke would have been shaken by like the corpses. I feel like we've already seen him see that, right? Like, and he didn't even care necessarily at the beginning about like burying people. He's like, what are you guys doing? Because I feel like death and life are like a very natural part of living in the wilderness like that. So I don't really know that that's what it is. I do think that Tanjiro shook him for a minute, because up to this point, any rage from Tanjiro that Inosuke's seen hasn't really been like very serious. We've talked about like the slapstick humor and like the funny stuff, and he got mad like during their initial interactions, but it wasn't like this. This is something different. And I think that this is one of the first times that he gets to really observe Tanjiro's resolve and feel almost like that. I hesitate to say bloodlust when I'm like describing Tanjiro, because I don't know that that's quite right, but like he's seething a little bit, which he doesn't do a lot. And so I think that that's shocking for him, because it doesn't happen a lot. It's the first time that he's seeing it, and he's like just now realizing that there is this other part to this gentle, kind person that he's been traveling with. So I think that it probably frightens him a little bit. I think maybe he's a little bit more frightened of Tanjiro in that moment than he is by like the actual circumstances. I think he probably also likes it a little bit. It's like, he's like, I'm deciding, like, am I afraid or do I like this? Because he's like that all the time. I feel like he's like always our angry little boy. But he also knows, I think in this moment, like, oh, this is serious. Like this just got like real. So that's my opinion.
Yeah, I really agree with that point too. I think in that moment, I think I don't see it as fear at that time. I see it as, you know, a value shift in Inosuke. And I think this is another like growth moment for him in the sense that like he understands the gravity of the situation at hand. Like, I think this is the moment where Inosuke gets some of that emotional intelligence to grow a little bit, because he's seeing, okay, like this person is, you know, extremely concerned, outraged, and like ready to go from seeing people die that he doesn't even know. And like, I think in that moment he's shaking because he somewhat doesn't understand the emotional connection that Tanjiro has to this moment. And he also is trying to figure out where he stands in this situation. So I think like this is kind of like a, you know, come to God moment for Inosuke. Like, wait, like what does this all mean for me? Like, how do I process all this? And I think he's starting to model himself after Tanjiro a little bit. Obviously he's still very rough around the edges, but he is trying to start developing that better like core values of human life and things like that. So I think it's really a moment for Inosuke where he is definitely stepping up to the plate, you know, as another core emotional being.
Yeah, I think this is literally the first moment that Tanjiro says something and Inosuke just goes, yeah, okay, and does it. It's not like a, that was my idea, like I can do that better than you. He was just like, yep, let's go. Definitely an interesting moment. All right. So before we jump into their fight with the headless demon, I do want to touch on Zenitsu because he's still wandering around the woods. Feels very Halloween. He's got spiders following him. He's crying as per usual. Chuntaro shows up and he's thankful that Chuntaro is there. Super cute bird. I love Chuntaro. I wish we see him more. But just for a fun Halloween question, because next episode, we're going to focus a lot more on Zenitsu. Would you be like Zenitsu if you were in the situation? Let's say that you're in a haunted house that's themed like a scary forest with spiders. How would you react in this situation?
Speaking from personal experience, I've actually already been in this situation. This will be my soapbox for the episode. I've literally kicked a haunted house employee like full-on roundhouse right to the thigh, and that man had a Charlie horse and he was like, man, grow up, you know what, I'm sorry that my leg thunderclapped and flashed yours, okay? Like, you need better reaction skills, okay? You want a realistic haunted house, you gotta be faster. But yes, 1000% I was that person. I was shaking. I walked to the car and stood like outside, and I was terrified of a man I knew was not like, you know, the Chainsaw Massacre guy, but he was there, right? So I know where my limits are, right? Like, I like to watch horror movies as like a controlled anxiety attack. Haunted houses, different story, let me tell you. Like, I am a different human being, okay? Like, usually I'm really like calm, chill. I could not breathe. So yeah, honestly, I think Zenitsu might have been doing better than me. Yeah, there's that.
Oh boy.
Dang. I don't really know how to follow that up, but if it makes you feel better, Brian, I've also kicked somebody that was in a costume on Halloween before. Okay, actually it wasn't my foot. It was my trick or treat basket. And to be fair, it was his fault. So, like, I got in trouble. I wasn't little. I don't know. I was probably like 9 or 10, and I went trick-or-treating, and there was some guy in his front yard, and he was like being a zombie. And when it's like that dark out, it's like hard to tell what's a decoration or what's a person. But then he like got up and started running at me, and I was like, oh, hell no. And he got the basket. So he caught the basket case. I'll tell you what. We weren't allowed to go back to that house trick-or-treating anymore after that.
Oh my god.
But Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I would do well. I have a healthy respect for the, like, the forests. We don't have a lot of them. For those of you that are just, like, kind of listening in, we are in Arizona, and there's not really, like, forests for the most part until you get to, like, northern Arizona. And even then, they're not, like, as dense, I don't think, as, like, what this would be that Zenitsu's walking through. And I just have a healthy respect and fear for, like, a lot of forests. Another podcast that I could totally make would be all about the Appalachian Trail. We're not going to get into that right now. But I'm like, but sometimes there are things in this world that are much older than me, older than a lot of things. They've seen a lot of things. And I have a respect for things that I don't understand that still exist. And so I am not a fan of, like, walking through forests in general. But certainly not at night and somewhere unfamiliar when there's also, like, certainly a looming presence that you're already aware of, because Zenitsu already knows that there's demons in here. That's why they got sent by the crows. It's not like this is a surprise. So not only does he know what is in there, he doesn't know if there's anything else that might be in there that he doesn't know about yet. It's the middle of the night. It's dark. I'd be a scaredy cat. There's no way. Yep. Like, but granted, I probably wouldn't be a demon slayer either. So.
Unfortunately, we all like to say that we would be, but I never could.
I'd be like the old lady bringing them into my house.
Yeah. Thank you for protecting me, because I am not brave enough to do what you do.
Literally.
I actually just went camping a couple weeks ago, and we got to our, like, little trail after dark. So we were in the part of Arizona that has, like, kind of a forest, and I was creeped out the entire time from the safety of my truck. Like, we didn't go anywhere, but I was still, like, terrified. I got the shivers. My husband had to, like, calm me down. He was like, babe, like, this is just the forest. There's nothing happening. I'm like, but there's creatures that can eat me. And I'm not referring to demons. I'm referring to creatures. And yet Zenitsu's around there, like, yeah, there's demons that will eat me, and spiders. And yeah, 100%. I would be like Zenitsu. I'm a scaredy cat through and through.
Listen, no one ever comes out of the forest the same, okay? We've visited this topic before.
We have. That is a thing. That has always been a thing in literature. This is my soapbox now. So, but the whole point of a forest, like, in folklore, like, you think about fairy tales, and you name any one of them that has a forest in it, Hansel and Gretel, Sleeping Beauty, you know, anything that involves the forest. The whole point of the forest in all these stories is that it's, like, a liminal space where anything can happen. And however you go in, you are not coming back out as the same person. Like, and it's just, like, such a good trope that's been used for, like, centuries. And so, like, I can't blame my man for being afraid here. And, like, yes, Tanjiro and Inosuke just kind of, like, charged right in, but they're still not going to be the same people that they were before they went in. So.
Yep.
Exactly.
A lot of cool things to come. Can't wait to get more into this arc. All right. I just felt like I had to throw that in. From the time of recording this, Halloween's only a few days away. So I think by the time this is actually uploaded, it'll be past it, but still spooky season. All right. Moving on to the fight scene with the headless demon, we get to see Inosuke and Tanjiro's teamwork start to shine through. We really have seen maybe moments where they kind of have some teamwork, but they're really starting to understand each other. So what do you think of their overall interaction with this fight?
I think it's really fun. Yeah, as fun as, like, a very violent fight can be. but we get to see Tanjiro's, like, natural skill come out again. And, like, he's very good at making decisions quickly. And he obviously has this super keen sense of smell that he's able to rely on. And Inosuke has, like, this kind of, like, brute, almost, like, primal instinct that is also handy, but can sometimes get him in a little bit of trouble, which we kind of see happen here. But I think that he's developing an admiration for Tanjiro to go alongside his main character syndrome that he has. But he observes, like, he does pay attention, and by watching and borrowing, I think, or, like, trying to one up the things that he sees happen in the fight, he's becoming a stronger demon slayer as well, learning from the people around him. So I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I think teamwork is a loose term, because like Inosuke, I don't think is fully at teamwork. I think he's at like, what is this? This is an Ayn Rand quote, but the virtue of selfishness, if you will, right? Like he's interested in his own personal development, and his personal development aligns with helping Tanjiro. I think of Inosuke as like a demi-demon, if you will, right? Like just because of his intents half the time, his intents don't always stem from helping like others as this pure soul of Tanjiro, but it comes from helping himself and helping him grow and become a better slayer. So I think he's, you know, taking what he's seeing, like you said, Emily, borrowing it and then trying to apply it for himself. I think that's where Inosuke and Tanjiro still defer at this point in their relationship, is because Inosuke still hasn't grown enough to understand like the return on investments of like benevolent relationships. And so really his character is starting to like break that shell of like individualisticism. That's not a word, I know, I'm aware, but you know, he's trying, which I think is a good start, right? Like Tanjiro has cracked the shell just enough to get him to kind of move his heart just a little bit.
Yeah, definitely good points. I think their personalities work well together. Like Tanjiro has that just natural leadership, and Inosuke is just wild and will jump in wherever needed and take the credit for it. But, you know, I think they make a great team from this. So, do you think this is like foreshadowing to a powerful bond in the future, the way they act in this scene? Because we're seeing this like weird sense of teamwork, but it's not fully teamwork, but maybe it could get there.
I think, you know, everything that they've gone through so far, right? Like a very, you know, off the wall way of meeting, right? Like it's not every day that you like walk into a random demon's house and then are like, hey, you come here often, right? Like, got any grapes? But the thing is here is that like they're going through a lot together. They've gone through, you know, this first fight, they've gone through a recovery arc, and now they're starting to get, you know, even better. They're starting to get in stride together. So I think it's just showing that like they're growing together. I feel like it's showing that this is becoming a team, and they're still in like the formation stages of a team. While it's not fully there yet, I think it's showing that like the Demon Slayers overall have an ability to band together like some good like sticky rice. I don't know where that came from. I'm sorry. I know what it was. I watched a lot of Uncle Roger TikToks before filming this.
Not Uncle Roger.
He's so funny.
Yeah, no, I agree with Brian. It's the beginning stages still, right? It's still very new, but I do think that there is foreshadowing for a powerful bond. And I think it's going to be all three of them. I should say all four of them. We need to not exclude poor Nezuko. But I think that like we have like our little quartet here of main characters, and I think that they're going to need to rely more and more heavily on each other as we progress through the story and through these different battles, because even though this is probably the most intimidating battle that they're facing head on in this season, we are still in season one. There's going to be bigger and badder fights coming up. And they're going to need each other, and they're going to need to have each other's backs if they all want to make it out alive. And I think that at minimum right now, they both have whatever their own respect is for life, like we talked about, and they're beginning to acknowledge and recognize those drives in each other and how they are a little bit different, and know that they can kind of bounce off of one another and have, I think, a little bit more trust than what there's been before. So I do think there'll be a powerful bond. I'm excited to see it continue to flourish and develop.
Definitely. All right, so I think we're starting to run out of time, so I'm going to try and get through these last couple of points pretty quickly. We see Tanjiro slay the mother demon. That's kind of how our episode ended up, is him taking her head. That was a beautifully heartbreaking scene. That was like one of the first times where I watched a scene where a demon was getting slayed, and I was like, oh, that was pretty. Like, what? We see that she has been tormented by Rui and threatened with the father, and she was just getting more and more scared and nervous to the point of, as she watches him come down, she realizes that she might be released. What do you think about this new dynamic for a demon that is pretty much willingly giving up at the hands of a slayer?
My God. The scene's animation. I think this is one of the more emotional moments. Like, because I usually don't cry during animes. I know, call me soulless, whatever you want. But this is, I think, one of the closer times I've gotten to crying. Because, like, this person's in pain, too. Like, just as much as they put, you know, the slayers through pain, it's like a system that's continued, though. Like, the only person being used was not just the slayers. That mother was a, you know, pawn of her own. And so, like, seeing her, like, come to the realization that she might be, you know, taken off the board was probably kind of freeing for her. So I was like, God damn. And then Tanjiro changed which form he was going to use, and, like, watching her head fall. Oh, so good.
Like Brian said, completely beautiful animation. And I think, like, a very beautiful sentiment here as well that we haven't really seen so early on in the deaths of other demons, and not even, I don't think, to this extent. As we progress through the story, we've seen the demons that have been slain by Tanjiro have flashbacks. Like he's reminding them somehow in their final moments of a bit of their humanity, whatever might be left. I wonder if maybe, you know, and this is, like, just me speculating from this episode in particular, but I wonder if maybe she's maybe a slightly newer demon or something, or maybe she's consumed fewer humans than some of the other ones, and so she's retained a little bit more of her humanity than some of the other demons that we've seen that have been slain, because that seems like it's, like, very poignant and very close to her. And it's some of the first thoughts that she has beyond just, like, self-preservation, I think, is, like, her first instinct here. But then, you know, in all of her final moments, she is more easily and willingly given up to the hands of a demon slayer. She accepts that. She offers a bit of advice as well in, like, her final breaths of, like, hey, there's something you need to know about what's on this mountain. And we'll get there in a moment. But I think that she's probably one of the most human demons that we've seen aside from Nezuko. So it's interesting.
Yeah, we're definitely continuing to progress the story, or we're getting different viewpoints of different demons. It's making it very interesting because, you know, they all have personalities and they all have backstories, really. So perfect segue into what I was about to ask about. She told Tanjiro that we have a real member of the 12 Kozuki here. Finally, we're going to meet someone who's one of this powerful 12 Kozuki that we've heard about, but we haven't actually met someone who's, like, an actual member. How are we feeling about that? What do we think is to come now?
We're coming up on our season finale, I think. This is a huge moment for our team, right? Because we've started from, like, literally ground zero. Tanjiro didn't know anything about demon slayers or that demons were even real at the beginning of episode one. Here we are. And not only has he taken down multiple demons along the way, but now he's close to at least part of his goal, which is getting some Kozuki blood back to Lady Tamayo. And so that, I think, is immediately where his brain is going when he hears this bit of advice. Because we've been close, but like you said, it's been, like, red herrings all the way. And so we haven't really gotten what we actually needed. And so this, if they're able to obtain it, is going to get them that much closer, I think, to Muzan, which is the end goal.
Yeah. a couple things here. First off, I think the quote still applies from Death Note. Humans sure are interesting. And I think that's kind of relevant in this moment, because I think it kind of reminds us of the humanity of all demons, right? Like, nonetheless, she's still a demon who was on Rui's team, like, full send, and then she's like, hey, like, be careful out there, this is what's going on. Like, that's still a piece of humanity that exists in them, and I think it brings them kind of closer to our hearts, which I think is also really interesting. Second, Rui being well, we don't know, but like the 12 Kazuki are here, right? Like now we know things are elevated because we've only seen a former member with the X in his eye, Kyogai, the drum demon. And he was pretty strong. Like Tanjiro was having a tough time there. Hopefully, you know, not having broken bones in this fight, hopefully they're fully recovered at this point. And, you know, he's going in with a little bit more energy. So we're seeing like an upside to this fight. However, there is equally that downside of so much being unknown at the moment. And so going into this, you know, we can tell that there's going to be some swords flying. There's going to be some heads chopping. Hopefully, you know, there's going to be a lot at play here. And I think that's what's really cool about seeing this episode end where it does, is because it does really leave you with a nice cliffhanger, you know, wanting that main course.
Yeah, it just goes to show that this is going to be a tough fight because it was pretty tough to get to this demon. And this is only the start, you know, like,
yeah,
they struggled a little bit. Inosuke got quite injured fighting that headless demon. And while Tanjiro is fine right now, you know, you have to wonder how many demons do they have to fight before they get there? What is it going to be like? So definitely sets us up well for the rest of this arc, for sure. Awesome. Any more thoughts on the episode before we transition to our favorite moments?
I think if Rui was actually a Pazuki, he would be served with mint ice cream. That's my insight there. Not related at all, but...
Wait, did you say Kizuki or Pazuki?
Pazuki. Pazuki. Oh, I said... If Rui was a Pazuki, okay, he would be served with mint ice cream.
I was like, well,
yeah, interesting, Brian. Super.
Emily's like, I don't follow. It's okay. It's usually me.
It's me. Oh, hi, I'm the problem. It's me.
It's me. I'm the problem. Oh, Lord. All right. Well, let's transition into those favorite moments. I will go first. I didn't touch too much on this earlier because I wanted to kind of talk about it as my favorite moment, but shocker, it's Tanjiro. I am so predictable. But when he slayed the mother demon and he was able to sense that she was willing to die, he switched forms midair. He was about to do form one. He switched to, I think it was form four.
Form five.
Yeah. To blessed rain after a drought, calm and beautiful. We talked about the animation, the way he looked at her, that empathy, just that whole moment was so beautiful. And again, just showing how much Tanjiro is empathetic. You know, we saw him have that moment earlier where it was like a bloodlust. He was so angry that like his presence changed and made Inosuke shake, but we're back to that pure soul that just sees that she's hurting, sees that she wants to die, and is willing to take her life quietly and calmly. I thought it was just so beautiful.
It is really a beautiful moment. Beautiful animation. Again, the soundtrack, like we don't talk about, I feel like we haven't talked about that in a while, but like just beautiful and like interwoven so well. So very good moment. My favorite moment though, I think it's like the little bit of foreshadowing, because now we've seen obviously like this mother figure demon be slain, and we've seen Rui, and we see a brief glimpse of one more spider demon, and we heard about what I think is one additional, because we've heard like, I might have to go tell father. Just let me tell father about this. Wait until my father hears.
My father will hear about this.
but there's something ominous about that, right? It's like, oh my gosh, like she's already doing all this damage. There's like another that we haven't even seen yet. And like, what is that? Like, is that our Kazuki? We don't know, but we've already seen that like there's still at least three more that our team is gonna have to deal with. So I really like that. Even the first time that I watched this, I was like, oh, like I want to see it. I want to see what father is so badly. So I think that that's done really well and like really builds the anticipation.
Yeah, I think this episode's really strong for a couple of different reasons. My favorite moment out of this one, though, is the moment where he asks her, you know, do I need to get dad? And I think it's kind of another foreshadowing moment, but in a different way, right? Because I think that these demon fights represent, I think, human struggles, right? And I think this one kind of hits home most for me because of like the family aspect of it. Like, I think that this stems, this entire, you know, from what we know so far, this group of demons that we've seen is stemming out of a lack of family and a lack of nurturing. And I think it kind of goes to talk about like abuse in family relationships and how, you know, unresolved family trauma can really harm people. And so that's where, you know, obviously in this fantasy land, this demon then takes it upon, you know, themselves to create a family, maybe. I don't know. But I think it definitely shows the problems of, you know, how families can affect people. And I think that's what's important about this episode is that like you're seeing these like bad family dynamics at play and like manipulation and, you know, deception here. So I think it's just a really interesting moment for people to then go ahead and try and watch this fight as you see like kind of the one family that we have, right? Like I would consider kind of our quartet a family because at this point, you know, they've seen life and death together and this now demon family. And I think it kind of shows the differences in relationships and that's a contrast within itself.
Mm. Yeah, this episode has so much happening and so many action scenes and yet it still just feels like one big foreshadow of like what is coming. It's just a buildup for sure. Awesome. Well, I think that's all the time that we have for today. So that's a wrap. Thank you everyone for listening in once again. As always, don't forget to like, subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on TikTok, do all the things. If you leave a comment on our YouTube videos or Instagram reels, we might answer it in a future episode. So keep that in mind. Other than that, have a great week and we'll see you next time. Umai.
Umai. Umai.
Oh, oh, no. Oh, no.
Wait, hold on. Let me do the Rengoku. Umai!
My boy. Oh. That's my boy. My son.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. All right. Umai.
Oh, Lord.